Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
Odell Beckham Jr. told reporters yesterday that he is tired of trying to make himself out to look like a good guy and that he's going to be himself. He also defended some of his sideline antics by comparing himself to Tom Brady without mentioning him by name. OBJ said, quote, "There's people who have plenty of rings and are considered the GOAT, and they do things on the sideline, and other people do things on the sideline, and they get away with it." Former All-Pro quarterback Antonio Cromartie now joining us this morning. Antonio, does he have a point here?
No, I don't think he have a point. I think you can't compare yourself to somebody else at the end of the day. The answers that he's pulled, nobody else has really pulled, you know, going out and kicking the net, punching Gatorade bottles, whatever it may be. At the end of the day, we have to show our emotions, but at the same time, still be professional enough to not let our emotions get the best of us. We got to move on. No matter how he says, oh, you know, I want to be out there, win or lose, draw. I want to make sure I finish the game. But, you know, the organization is doing what they're supposed to do. They're protecting their players. You're already getting blown out 38-7. There's no reason to have you out there on the football field for you to try to patch your stats because you had two catches for 25 yards. You got to go out yourself and just go out and just be supportive of the guys that's out there. Move on to next week and see how we can get better.
I agree to a certain extent, but my thing is that when quarterbacks do it, it's viewed as passion. Wide receivers do it, they've been as divas. And the thing that I conveyed to Odell is that you have to understand there have been times that your actions were not about the betterment of the football team. It was about the betterment of Odell. And so it's hard for people to differentiate when you're trying to be passionate and trying to get your team motivated and when you're trying to be selfish and talk about, I'm not getting enough catches and I need the ball. And so you're asking people to try to weigh the two when they don't really know, when they've seen you do both things. And so I told them, I said, just like that catch, you're never going to be able to live that catch down. You're never going to be able to live what transpired in that Carolina game down. And so, Odell, you're going to have to, basically, you're going to have to walk a tightrope. And that's just the way it is. There's a double standard. Definitely. Whether you play professional sports, where you're in a job setting, it does not matter. Yes, there is a double standard. And the more accomplished you become, the more likely you'll be able to get away with certain things. Odell needs to understand that, because, Crow, I think you and I both understand that because we played the game. There's a double standard. But, Odell, you have to understand this. Until you're ultimately going to be judged by wins and losses. And yes, you probably lost more than you won. And so people are not going to view you as favorably as they view the guy who that's won more than he's lost in the guy that you brought up without mentioning his name, which is Tom Brady. But for me, Crow, this is how I look at it. Just because you win championships or you won a bunch of games, that does not mean you're beyond reproach. And I'm a firm believer. I'm a respect kind of guy. And I give what I want in return, which is respect. So I'm not going to get in your face yelling and screaming because I don't want you in my face yelling and screaming. I'm going to do my job to the best of my ability. Hopefully you do the same. But in Odell's 100%. Case, Odell's case, he does have a point to a certain degree, is that a lot of times that we view anything that a quarterback does as passion and anything a wide receiver or anybody else does as being devious, diva-ish.
That's 100%, but you got to think about the answers that he was pulling on early on in his career.
Oh, yeah.
That's what everybody goes by.
Yes.
You know, yeah, you're saying you're showing the passion of the game, you're doing this, but there's different ways that you can go about it. You know, everything he does, put it through a microscope. So you got to carry yourself in a way to show your passion, but at the same time, don't let it be negative towards yourself. Don't let it be negative towards the organization or anything else. The whole thing, you want to move in a way and just be professional about everything that you're doing. You know, like, yeah, okay, you don't care about what you're doing, your antics or whatever, but at the end of the day, it's not about you. It's about the organization and trying to get wins and get yourself in the playoffs to produce and go out and try to go win a championship every week.
Okay, so to your point, Mr. Sharp, I'm going to be more specific here. In general, the white fans and white media tend to condemn any antics or outbursts by especially black receivers as diva acts, right, or selfish acts, while giving passes to white quarterbacks for their outbursts or their antics as passion for the game. Okay, I got it.
Perfect.
Yes.
Okay, here's the perfect. Let Cam had did the McCrinkleberry.
Okay.
Like Aaron Rodgers.
All right.
What would have been saying, Skip?
You got me. Correct. I am with you. But now back to Crow's point. Odell doesn't have any resume to fall back on. He's coming from a position of weakness because all of those outbursts when he was a Giant were mostly about him. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting enough catches, whatever. The game's going the wrong way for me, so I'm going to take it out on the kicking net or the Gatorade bottle or whatever it is. And I like Odell. I think his heart is in a good place. I just think his perspective is lost because when then you call into question the GOAT of quarterbacks, 6 Super Bowl championships, 9 Super Bowls, a playoff record of 30-11, while you, Odell, played in 1 playoff game and lost it, in part because you led your wide receivers down to South Beach for a day off to get ready for a playoff game, your first and only, on the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. And early in that game, you dropped a 3rd-and-5 pass, and then in the second drive, you dropped a touchdown pass, and it contributed to a game that got completely out of hand in favor of Aaron Rodgers and company, 38-13. Okay, so when did Brady get criticized? And he does take his fair share of criticism. He read the riot act to his offensive line on the sideline at Chicago late in the third quarter after a drive on which the offensive line committed 3 holding penalties. Mike Evans had an offensive push-off pass interference. And his center, Ryan Jensen, post-play after an 11-yard completion, headbutted a defender and got a 15-yard flag. All 5 of those fouls occurred on 1 drive that wound up in 4th-and-27. And they were clinging to a 16-14 lead. And Brady, when he goes psycho Tom on the sideline, it's all about we got to win this game. It's really not about him. You can say part of it is, but it's about we have to do this. We've got to be better than this. So they didn't respond that night, but then the next game they played was last Sunday against Green Bay, and they had 0 penalties with 0 turnovers and 0 sacks. Okay, did that contribute, his outburst on the sideline? Was that leadership, or was he being a diva quarterback? I would chalk it up to effective leadership.
Well, I think the thing is also that's working against Odell is that we've never seen Tom Brady kick a net. Now, if you want to bring the team over, if you want to say, look, guys, we got to play better. Offensive line, I need you to block better. Hey, wide receivers, my group, we need to get open quicker. We need to do things better. If you want to do that, I got no problem with it. But you can't conflate saying kicking a kicking net and throwing water bottles and is the same thing as Tom Brady. I get it. But like Crow said earlier, some of your actions in which you've displayed in the Giants has followed you because that's what happens. Things that we've done in our past, that follows us for the rest of our life. Now, we can try and push it down and make it, you know, less, people don't bring it up as much. But until Odell starts to win, and until that happens, that we're going to always go back on that. Mm. And like you said again, Crow, at 38-7, what were you going to do? You going to get a couple more catches, and so now you got 4 catches for 38 yards? Bruh, it's not worth the risk because guess what? When a game like that, I see you still in the game, and are you trying to, well, now I got to try to get, I'm going to, you know how guys are, Crow. Oh, you trying to pad your stats. You trying to make me look bad out here. The game over. Get out of the game.
Look bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. By the way, did you just go conflate on Undisputed? I'm impressed. I've never heard that word used, uttered on this show.
Oh, my bad. Well, pad. Huh? You tried to pad your stats.
Okay.
I know from a, you know, being on the team and having defensive guy, if the game is out of hand, don't you bring your butt back in here trying to pad your stats.
So Crow, let me ask you. Did you and Revis ever, as Jets, read the riot act to your other DBs about a broken coverage when you were on the sideline? Did you ever go off on teammates?
No. If it was a broken cover, it's because I looked at myself. I get pissed off with myself and go throw my helmet down from that standpoint. Yeah. But I go back and look at the film and just ask the coach, you know, what did we do on this one and the call from this, and make sure I get the call from everybody else. But it wasn't no, you know, me getting on people. Me and Revis felt like, you know, we was going to hold everybody accountable no matter what. And those guys want to play to a higher standard too. So it's like, if we messed up, we had to come together and figure out what we was doing wrong. I mean, if you want to talk about a mishap, you're going to go back to that 45-3 game 2010 versus the Patriots when we lost on that Monday night game. We ain't getting nothing right. But we held each other accountable, just try to make sure we do the things that we try to do with no kicking, no fussing around. We had a lot of busted coverage. I think I had like 4 or 5 minute errors during that game, along with Revis and everybody else. But it was just a point of us coming together on the sideline and trying to regroup and do the things that we got to try to do for the next week, because we was already blown out. It's nothing that we can do. Just get ready. Just forget this game and move on to the next one, because there's nothing we can do. We're not going to come back from 45-3 in the next 5 minutes. So who cares?
Okay, but what if you were supposed to have safety help and you trusted he was going to be there for you, and it made you look bad because you got blown by?
I would always tell you this, Skip, and that's what I've always been told. As a corner, I never look for safety help. Never depended on him because of run pass read. You know, if he get drawn up, I got to play over the top of him no matter what. So I never was looking for a safety to be over the top of. I never wanted to go back and point the finger at nobody. I just wanted to get to the sideline and make adjustments and see what I did wrong or what was the communication on this part. That was
Shannon,
it.
I think I just asked the wrong guy, because he and Revis are like, we got this.
Yeah, well, right? you have to, Skip. For me, I mean, I'm always asking, if I got a block, okay, I need to know, Zim, are you helping me T-bone? Are you going to help me inside, or am I by myself? Because I'm going to sit differently. Now, I think the thing is, Crow, is that if you thinking, like, you know what, I'm going to play in, you're not going to play. If you realize that you don't have any help, you're not going to play outside leverage on a corner. Now, if you think I might not have any help, you're going to play, try to take away the inside, because you're not going to give up the middle of the field to a wide receiver. So no. I'm anticipating, if I got help, I'm not going to sit hard inside because I know I got a tackle right there. But if I got no help, I'm taking away the inside first. Now,
well, I'm thinking on top of that, Shannon, but the thing was, we always said, what's good help and what's bad help?
Right.
If we had a nickel or a safety to our side, that was good help. If we had a linebacker that was dropping, or a defense or outside linebacker that was dropping, we considered that bad help. Not saying nothing that against them. It was just a point of, we had more athletic guys on the back end that we know we can depend on, rather than the front guys that never really drop. So when that happens, you got to play tighter coverage and understand where the ball's possibly going, because who's dropping.
Or you're like, bro, you got to get up under that. You know, I'm over the top. You got to get to that. You got to get to that.
I ain't telling him that, because I ain't want him to get no pick. I was trying to get it.
Bro, you got to get up under that, bro.
But it's just the way it is. It's just football, man. It's a team sport. It's the hardest thing, because you got to depend on everybody else. It's nothing like basketball. It's nothing like any other sport. Football is the most team-oriented sport, because you have to depend on other people to do their job and do it at a very high level. And that's the thing that people forget half of the time, that it's not just a me sport, man. It's a true team sport, because you got to depend on other people to do the things that they have to do. No mercy.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
The Cowboys are 2-4, but still remain in first place in the NFC East, just ahead of the Eagles. Despite the bevy of injuries to the offense combined with poor defensive play, Stephen Jones said that he believes the Cowboys are still in the mix. Antonio Cromartie is still with us as well. So, Antonio, can you still see the Cowboys winning the NFC East?
I do. I still feel like they can still win the NFC East. I think this division is going to remind everybody of the 2010 NFC West, when I think it was it the Rams, Seattle, or somebody made it, Seattle made it at 7-9 or something like that. So I think this is going to be that year for the NFC East. But I do see Dallas taking it. I think they still have all the talent in the world. I think they still have a better quarterback in the division with Andy Dalton at the Rams and everything now. Better than Carson Wentz, better than what they have in New York. And, I mean, it's just a point of just understanding that they got to just go out and go win the ball. Zeke can't have another game the way that he just had this past Monday and go out there throwing the ball two or three times. They just got to pick it up. Defense got to play better. Secondary definitely has to play better because from what I'm seeing, it's bombs over Baghdad over there anytime somebody go past 15 yards. So and they're not tackling well. There's a lot of people that's out of position on the defense side of the ball also. But I still got Dallas winning division. I see 7-9, 8-8.
He just said Andy Dalton is better than Carson Wentz.
Well, I would disagree with them on that. But
not me.
I think the thing is, for me, Dallas should run away with this division. You look at the Eagles, and you talk about the Cowboys being injured, but you got the Eagles. All three of their offensive linemen are out. Now, D-Jack comes back, but Jalen Reagor and Alshon are both out for tonight. Then they might be back in a few weeks. Both tight end, Goddard and Ertz, are out. Sanders is out. What? And you mean to tell me with those, he still has Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup, he still has Zeke, he still has, what's the other guy, Pollard. He still got Pollard? And you're talking about they're only going to go 7-9, 8-8 with that talent and the best quarterback in that division? That should have, they should lose another game.
Wait a second. Who do I have left in my offensive line? I'll take your line over my line. I'll trade you right now.
Okay, I'll trade you line. You give me those skill position players. But I'm still taking the Eagles because I still believe that Walker to him is still the best quarterback. Now, that's not, look, and I said if you force me to, you know, Andy Dalton is probably the best quarterback in this division. That wasn't an endorsement of Andy Dalton. That was an indictment of the NFC East and the quarterback play. But the one thing I can say about Carson Wentz, he's fighting his tail off given the circumstances. He just played arguably two of the three best teams or two of the top four teams in the AFC, the Steelers and the Ravens. And even with all that, the hodgepodge of players that's in and out of the lineup, he's giving his all. One of these days, they're going to break through. Now, they're going to break through tonight. They're going to get the Giants tonight. And then the first, they got something for your guys.
Andy Dalton is better than Carson Wentz. You even admitted it publicly.
He's not better than
me. That's an indictment of Carson Wentz.
First of all, you and I both know. We got the best redhead in the division.
Yeah?
Yep.
Who is that?
Walking to him.
He's redheaded?
Yeah, he's redheaded.
I don't think he's redheaded.
Yeah, he's redheaded. Yeah, he's not like Andy Dalton. He's not a true all-the-way ginger.
Okay.
But it's close enough.
Okay, I got it. I am with Crow on this. The Cowboys should win the NFC at least, and they will win it. I'm not sure I would go with Crow's. They have all the talent in the world because they are very deficient in the secondary of talent, devoid maybe, and in the offensive line. But I still say, and I want Crow's response on this one, they have six players on defense, seven if I include Sean Lee, who's supposed to be back. I don't know how much he'll play, but seven players who have made Pro Bowls. That defense is so historically bad that it's on pace to allow the most points in the history of pro football. That means something is very wrong. I think it's the new coordinator, Mike Nolan. As I said yesterday, Jerry Jones should drop the mic, as in drop the mic on Mike Nolan. I don't think he's working at all. They have rejected whatever he's teaching or coaching. They have mutinied against him. We got anonymous quotes from players, I assume defensive players, saying they can't teach, they can't prepare. So to me, it's so wrong. There's still all the talent in the world in the front seven because Jalen Smith and Wolf Hunter, Vander Esch, they made the Pro Bowl last year. Mm-hmm. DeMarcus Lawrence made the Pro Bowl last year. Aldon Smith has been a revelation. He has come back to Pro Bowl life. And now they might even add Randy Gregory on Sunday, who had six sacks in 2018. He can fly off the edge. So, Crow, give me your thoughts. Why isn't the system connecting with the talent?
You got a guy that hasn't been a part of the game for 7 years. I think his last job was 14.
In Atlanta.
So he's been away from the game for 6 years. And then you got to think, these guys are not the system that he's trying to run, I don't think it's letting the guys do exactly what they want to do. You look on the back end, there's so much confusion going on the back end that the communication still isn't there. And I can see why some players are coming out and saying some things, anonymous tips, or though somebody's coming out and saying some things. But you can tell that the communication, the swagger that it was actually playing with on defense the last couple of years is not there. It just seems like there's no rush into buying into what Mike Nolan is trying to do, because they don't trust him. They don't believe in his system. They don't believe in any of that. When you got guys that don't do that at this level, it's not going to work.
Yeah,
you're only as good as your what? You can't say they had seven Pro Bowlers. They're not playing like it this year.
Yeah, and by the way,
I think
go ahead.
Bruce Arians always said this. Your five star players got to play like your five star players.
Yeah,
and they're not doing that week in and week out.
Okay, so you realize the last time Mike Nolan was a defensive coordinator was 12, 13, and 14 in Atlanta in that last year. They gave up the most yards in the whole league, the Falcons did. So what are your credentials that you just got hired as the Cowboys DC?
Because you're Mike McCarthy's best friend.
That is correct.
Crow, let me ask you a question.
Thank you.
Crow, let me ask you a question. You're in quarters. Mm-hmm. The wide receiver goes to crack the safety that's in a walk position. Tell me what you're doing as a corner right now.
You got to climb high. You have to climb high because you don't know if he's going to crack anyway. Because if he doesn't crack,
you're on the 5 yard line.
Oh, we got to go now. You got
to
go.
Watch that touchdown to Christian Kirk. And you tell me what the corner's doing. I tell people all the time: if you make a tackle in the end zone, it's still a touchdown. You don't get credit for a tackle in the end zone. That's the thing. If they run the coverage, Christian Kirk run the seam. They ain't cover one. They got curled. They got the DB is up. Now, he got hooked. He got curled flat. You got the deep third. You see the safety, go to the middle of the field. You see the backside corner, go to the deep third. Oh, it's three thirds to make a hole, not two thirds. So one guy is not doing his responsibility. It's hard for me to believe that Mike Nolan on the DB did not cover that with him. Guys are not doing their responsibility. Look at the Patriots. The Patriots never really have talent in the secondary other than one guy. They had Revis. I'm talking about extremely talented. They had Gilmore. But for the most part, they got mix and match pieces. But everybody is where they're supposed to be. If you got hook flat, take it. If you got the curl, take it. If you got deep middle, deep third, take it. These guys are bull jiving, Crow. You let them off the hook. Them guys out there freelancing, doing what they want to do. It's hard for me to see a scenario. On the play that Kenyon Drake hit his head on the goalpost. You got two linebackers and a safety. Somebody got to hit the A-gap. Ain't nobody hit the A-gap.
Everybody standing around watching. Now, I'll give you that. That especially on that Christian Kirk touchdown. The 80-yard touchdown, I don't know what the corner's doing. His eye was in the backfield the whole time. And then he stopped his feet.
Yes!
So that's on the play. But you got to think about this too, though, Shannon. When you're playing these games, we get a game scheme, just like everybody else on the team. We got a game scheme. We know what we're supposed to run. Like you said, how many guys are really studying? How many guys are understanding their job? How many guys are understanding their job clearly? Because at the end of the day, I've been around some coaches that are explaining something, and you'd be looking at him crazy. Like, no, you can't play this like this. How are you going to play it like this? I've been a part of that. But, you know, by me being and having me, Revis, and other guys being around in the organization – and being playing for a long time together, it was easy for us to make adjustments on the field without the coaches saying anything to us at all. You got a bunch of young guys that are trying to do something that a coach is telling them to do, and it's but their playing is also how it's being taught too. We don't know how everything is being taught to them and what's being told to them on certain things. So we can't sit here and say certain things are happening with the players and some things are happening with the coaches, because I think it's a two-way street on both sides.
Crow, let me ask you a question. As a defense, how did you guys meet? Was it all of you guys, D-line, linebackers, and DBs, or did you? Because when we met, the way we met is that wide receivers, running backs, and the quarterback, so we hear the same language. We hear this. I knew what Ed was. I knew what Rod was. I knew what TD had. They knew what I was supposed to do. So is that how you guys did it?
Oh, I mean, you got to think, that Wednesday meeting is the most important meeting of it all, because that's when we're all together. That's when you break down the film. But the thing that Rex used to do and also Todd Bowles used to do he used to question the guys, the front seven, on what the secondary has. So they know exactly what everybody's job is. And it made it a lot easier. That was our Wednesday thing. On Fridays, we sat down and watched the first 35 plays of the first three games for that week, just because we wanted to make sure we got the calls right. We wanted to make sure that we basically played the game on Friday after that short practice. So we come in at 12:30, 1 o'clock for an hour and a half and watch that film, go over the first 35 plays, and then, you know, we make sure that any questions that needs to be answered, we answer them right then and there. But we don't have no miscommunication, so we don't have those mistakes that we was falling into. So it's like, as a defense, you have to meet as a whole. You have to play the game as a whole. The linebackers have to make the calls in the meeting room with everybody being there, for everybody can be in their gaps where they're supposed to be, and the secondary is supposed to see the same thing that they're supposed to see. If you don't have that and the guys are not taking initiative to that, then this is all on the players at the end of the day. That's not the coaches. That's the players, because this is your job. This is what you're supposed to do. This is what you're paid to go out and go do. So how can I be the best at my job if I'm only going to give you 30% of what I'm supposed to give you?
Mm. Okay, let's go back to your Andy Dalton assessment. Why would you call him the best quarterback in the NFC East? What do you see from him at this stage at 31 years of age that would make him the best?
I just think he has more experience at the position and being playing in these games. Carson Wentz has been hurt every single year, hasn't really had a full year. He's very injury prone. And you can see that week in and week out. His body is taking a toll because of the beating. He's trying to go out and go play 100%. Andy Dalton, he can go out there and go do it. I believe he can. He has weapons around. I think he has a lot more weapons than he had with him when he was in Cincy. You know, you had Amari Cooper, you had Gallup, you had CeeDee Lamb, you had Zeke, you had Pollard. You know, you add those guys in that offense. That's one of the best offenses he's had since, you know, while he was in Cincy, too.
By the way, did you play against Andy Dalton? I assume you did somewhere.
Yeah, I did. Andy got me, him and A.J. Green, 2013.
Really?
I gave up,
98 or 101 to A.J. Green.
Woo.
But no touchdown.
Woo. Hey.
Yeah, you said it. Hey, I would have never told that one.
Listen, I'm done playing.
See, that's why he's giving it up to Andy now.
I don't have to go out there and go cover these receivers no more. I can get my tip and my points, and I can be done with it.
Well, Walker to him is the best quarterback in that division, and that's why they're going to win this division.
Mm.
And there you have it.
Yeah, he walks better than he throws.
But I told you last year, Walker to him was the best in that division. And he won the division with four games to play. We three games down, and we walked him down.
Mm. Impressive. So, Crow, last question. Ezekiel Elliott, what do you see now? Because I'm not seeing enough.
I think when you look at the Monday night game, I think he was trying to do too much. I just think he's trying to put everything on his shoulders and rather just being Zeke. Standpoint of, you know, his quarterback is going down. I got to do a lot more. I got to do this. I got to try to do this. No, man, just do what you're supposed to do. Catch the ball out of the backfield, make plays, and then give your quarterback a safety net every single time. Be that guy that he can depend on. Don't try to do too much, you know, and I just think that's what he was doing. He was trying to do too much on that Monday night, and everything just hit the fan for him.
Yeah.
I think this coming week is going to be a lot better. I think Zeke's going to have a better game plan. His mind's going to be where it needs to be. You got to think, man, when you lose your quarterback and one of your best friends for the whole entire year, the guy that you can depend on, man, it takes a toll on you mentally. So he just got to regroup, get back into it, and just go back and go play football the best way you know how. That's the same thing with the receivers. Can't get frustrated. Got to stick to the game plan and trust the process.
Hey,
I agree.
Washington spent a lot of money on that front seven.
Mm.
I'm looking forward to eat on Sunday.
Mm.
I'm looking for that front seven.
Well, wait a second. Maybe Zeke's primary responsibility on Sunday will be to block blitzers, right?
Well, Chase Young and Ryan Kerrigan going to be coming. And Big Jonathan Allen, they're going to be Cubby Skip.
Mm.
Yeah, it's goodness.
Crow, appreciate your time, and really interesting that you've seen Andy Dalton do it and do it well. So something to think about, guys. We will check in with you, Antonio, very soon.
No mercy.
Tomorrow night on Fox, it's Game 3 of the World Series. Catch Mookie Betts, Walker Buehler, and the Dodgers as they take on rookie sensation Randy Arozarena and the Rays. With the series all tied at 1 apiece. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Well, remember this. The Clippers had an early exit from the playoffs and are still seeking their first conference finals appearance. Despite landing Kawhi Leonard and Paul George last offseason, one anonymous NBA agent said that they have heard the Clippers are planning to break up their roster this offseason. Shannon, should they do this?
Skip, I think they are going to do it for the simple fact, and I think the most likely person to leave is probably Paul George. They need to get some of that draft capital, but they gave up, Skip, and I don't know if they're going to get it back in the picks, because I don't think Paul George is going to command from some, you know, you're going to get what you gave up to get him. But if the Nets are willing to part with, say, Dinwiddie or Caris LeVert or Jared Allen, I think that's a move that the Clippers would be willing to make. Now, I don't know, because and people are like, whoa, they're going to be. But all those ball guys at Brooklyn, Skip, they need the ball. LeVert needs the ball. KD, Kyrie, Dinwiddie, they need the ball. So it's going to be very, very interesting. Now, Trez Harrell is going to be very interesting because he did not play in the bubble and in the playoffs as well as he did in the regular season when he earned Sixth Man of the Year. So people are going to be looking at that. I just think the thing is that this is a – Kawhi needs a point guard. You look at Kawhi. When he had his best year, Skip, what did he have? He had a true point guard. He had Tony Parker, and he had Kyle Lowry. Now, nothing against Pat Bev, but Pat Bev is not that. And Kawhi doesn't want to have the ball all the time and make plays for someone else. He wants someone that can make plays for him. So I do believe they're going to break this up, and I believe the most likely candidate to leave is Paul George. They got too many billboards. They got too many Kawhi Town and all these commercials for Kawhi to get out of town. But I believe the most likely scenario, Skip, is Paul George will exit the Clippers.
I cannot tell you how much I disagree with everything you just said.
Okay.
I don't know what they will do. I know what they should do, which is nothing.
They just
made the one move they had to make, and that was to elevate Ty Lue to replace Doc Rivers.
Okay.
That's why you and your Lakers are going to be in trouble next year, because you should have been in trouble this year. This Clippers team, had a combined missed 114 regular season games for injuries. Mm-hmm. 33 different starting lineups during the regular season. And then this team went to the bubble, or wait a second, some went to the bubble, some didn't want to go to the bubble until our friend Jared Dudley said on a podcast last week, those boys did not want to be in that bubble.
They ain't merely tough
okay?
like us.
Okay, I'll give you that one for now. But the point was, nothing went right for a team that was favored to win it all going into the playoffs. Vegas said that's the best team. So why would you break up a team that the odds makers proclaimed was the best team going into the playoffs?
They didn't really look like that.
The odds makers kept favoring the Clippers over the Nuggets in individual games far more than they favored the Lakers over the Nuggets when they met. Mm-hmm. So you were so lucky. LeBron got the second biggest break of his career when the Nuggets upset the Clippers.
Oh, you thought that was an upset?
No, the first break was when Ray Allen hit that shot from the corner that saved his legacy. But the point was, did you see one time the Nuggets blow the Clippers off the court?
Yes,
no, you did not.
Game 7.
Oh, stop it.
Skip, we beat them by 20.
They were up by 12 in Game 7.
They got beat by 20.
You saw them dominate the Nuggets for long stretches of each closeout game. They were up 16 in the first closeout, 19 in the second closeout, and 12 in the final closeout. They flexed their muscles. They showed you they were clearly superior
to
the Denver Nuggets.
But they weren't working out, so they had no muscle.
Okay, yeah. Well, you can have all your jokes that you want to have, because you won. You got every break.
We had a break.
You had the easiest path to a ring in the history of paths.
Skip, we had
it all broke right for you.
We had the same path. We got to travel the same exact road you were on.
Mm.
But the difference is that our mentality. I told you, Skip, the greatest key to survival is not size, it's not strength, it's not speed. Mm. It's adaptability. Your inability to adapt to your surroundings, which was the bubble. Our ability to adapt to our surrounding, which was the bubble, was the key to us winning the title and me being able to gloat and you losing and you being sad.
Mm.
Now, I keep telling you, oh, Kawhi the cyborg. Oh, he feel that. I can't tell.
Mm.
I can't tell.
You could tell all year.
He was all upset. Did you see it, Randy Raymond? I didn't pass the ball for that bleep. He just clowning people and all the, whoa, Kawhi, what going on? But my guy, y'all want to try to paint my guy as being difficult to play with. My guy bring rings. And look here, if you don't have a ring, if you want to get a ring, you want to get married, come see my guy. Because my guy put rings on people's fingers.
Yeah,
that's what my guy does.
Cubic
zirconia. Miami, they wanted ring. They wanted some more ring.
Yeah.
My guy got him a ring.
Yeah.
They went back to Cleveland. Yeah. L.A. hadn't had a ring in almost two and a decade. Everybody got rings. Yes, Jeannie, the first female in a major sport. No, I think Georgia Frontier was first.
I think she was.
But hey, basketball. So never mind, whatever. Jeannie got this thing right, and we're going to... Every you still remember, y'all were talking crazy. Oh, they should think about trading LeBron. Oh, he over the hill. Oh, he got hurt. Now, everybody, that crow, they tell me crow tastes like quail sometimes. You cook it just right. Don't overcook it. Don't make it get chewy. It tastes like quail. How that crow tastes it right now?
Well, you tell me next year when the Clippers win it all.
Skip,
y'all the Clippers should stay as is and go right back into where they were.
Let me tell you why you're not going to win it. Because the Lakers are not going to stay as is. That's what because I know Goat James know we can't stand Pat.
I don't get the reference to Goat James.
You
it sounds
do
like
get
he's
it.
Just another goat in the barnyard.
No, he not.
There's Goat James and Goat Tom and Charlie.
First of all, Tom Brady, Goat James is where it's at in basketball. Now, I don't like to do cross-reference with sports or anything like that because it's too hard. Because in football, you only play one side of the ball. Basketball, you can influence baseball. You can hit, pitch, catch, and do all the other things. I get all that. But in basketball, Goat James is where it's at. And I told you we going to win it in six. Told you we five. That's what we do, Skip. You want a ring? Who wants a ring? Who wants a ring? Dwight Howard said, you know what? I'm going to put all my pride aside. I want a ring. Here we go. AD says, I need to get up out of here. The food is great. I love the gumbo. I love the etouffee. I love the beignet. I love all that. But I want a ring. You come to L.A., boom. So if you want a ring.
It's been a long time since you
want
a ring.
Joe Harris, you want a ring? Bogdanovich in Sacramento, you want a ring? You want a ring? Come see you. Come see me.
Really?
I'll make it happen. Jared Dudley wanted a ring. You laughed at Duds. Yeah, what Duds is a champ now.
Yep. He's a COVID champ.
Hold on.
So I loved what Ty Lue said yesterday because obviously the void at the top of this team has been leadership because Kawhi's not a takeover the locker room kind of
Correct.
A leader. He leads by example. But Ty Lue said yesterday, you are not going to have the best players be the natural leaders at all times. It doesn't happen like that. I think a lot of the leadership has to come from me, said Ty Lue.
Yeah.
He can do that.
Yeah.
He also said that he will hold these players accountable.
Yeah, you should.
And Steve Ballmer indicated he would hold them more accountable than Doc was holding them accountable.
Good.
Yes, good.
And guess what? No more load managing. No more load managing.
Ty Lue did question that.
Yes.
He said he was going to re-examine that concept.
My guy, year 17, playing, giving that work. He take it off every other night. Ty Lue say, I wish I might give it off to you.
Yeah.
But don't worry about it. All that's going to be, you can do whatever you want to. You can play him every night.
Ty Lue guided LeBron to his one ring in Cleveland, and he's going to guide the Clippers to their first ring of several with the other team in LA.
I just want you to tell me one thing. Who you going to get to do something with AD? That's why the Golden State Warriors went and begged KD to come there because there was no answer for that. You still haven't told me who they're going to get. Did you see what Jamal Murray did to those two guys? Did you see what Luka did to those two guys? And you think y'all can see us? On what day?
Did you have to face us? In the Western Conference Finals, that's a whole different beast.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, AD's going, should I shoot this or not? I don't know.
I sent out the invitation.
Mm.
Come.
Mm-hmm.
You guys didn't even show up.
Yeah.
What happened? Did your car break down? Did you not like the outfit that you had? What went wrong?
We had circled the dates on our calendar, and we were looking ahead to those dates.
But when we sent the invitation, we told you to save the date. We told you in advance to save the date.
Yeah.
And then what happened? You booked Cancun and golfing plans on that date, and there you went. Get in here, Skip. One, two, three. One, two, three, Cancun. That was old Pat Bev. Pat Bev on the beach with Tim's right now. Shuffling, going to do wind spread side to side.
I want you to gloat and gloat and gloat for the whole offseason because you lucked into one. You finally got one right, and you should enjoy it while it lasts because it will not last.
What happened to old Way Off P?
Yeah.
A Way Off P. That's what they called him. No, Way Off.
Yeah.
He hit the side of the back. Even what you call him does mention that. St. Paul George hit the side of the backboard.
Yep.
How you do that? You had to aim at it. I mean, you got to do that, Skip. I mean, he good at it. I mean, he hit the side of the back. I'm like, wow. Did he thought he was going to get a couple of points for that? And then Kawhi. But let that have been LeBron. Let that have been LeBron that scored 2 points in the fourth quarter of, I mean, the second half of a game seven. Game seven. Because you do know we got the highest scoring average in game seven's history. We averaging 35. That's what we do.
Yeah, I did see you in that closeout game five playing the whole fourth quarter and just piling it up.
With no pile.
Rolling it up.
It wasn't no pile up, Skip.
Yep.
I just want to know who thought, and what I just want to know what basketball aficionado thought those two jokers were better than LeBron and AD.
Did you just call Kawhi a joker?
Both of them two jokers.
Shannon, we are
the champions.
You know what they say.
You also get a ring?
All right, I'm going to get me a ring.
Oh,
I'm going to get me a ring. Now, mine might be pure zirconia, but I'm going to get me a ring and flash it every time I come out of here.
You know what you're going to get? Karma. Karma. And you know what they say about it?
You know, you're right, Skip. That's the thing I love about karma. Because sometimes karma is like, you know, like it's you got to wait years. And sometimes it's like Amazon Prime. They drop it off the next day.
Yep.
Hey, you know, I'm going to get my repeat.
We'll see. Tonight, it's a classic NFC East rivalry that's been all Philly as of late. Daniel Jones and the Giants try to get their season going as they take on Carson Wentz and the Eagles. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, NFL Network, and streaming on Amazon Prime. During a podcast interview, J.R. Smith compared the title team he was on with LeBron in 2016 in Cleveland to LeBron's 2020 Lakers championship team. JR called that Cavs team better defensively and grittier, but ultimately said the Lakers' size and versatility would have beaten out that Cavs squad. So, Shannon, which was the better team, the 2020 Lakers or the 2016 Cavs?
I believe it's the 2020 Cavs for the very reason that JR...
2020 Lakers.
For the very reason that JR said, it's because of their versatility. It's because they can go really, really big. They can go Dwight. They can go JaVale, AD, LeBron. Or they can go, you know, small, medium size with Keith Morris starting at the five spot and AD. Or they can go really, really and put AD at the five and then go three guards with LeBron. I think it's their versatility and their ability to do different things. And Anthony Davis, if Double T tries to guard him, he's going to bring him away from the basket, shoot over the top. Kevin Love guards him, he's going to put him down on the block. So for me, Skip, Anthony Davis is the difference maker. LeBron is going to be LeBron. Is LeBron maybe as athletic? Maybe he's lost a step. But I think his knowledge, his understanding is even greater. If you can imagine that, imagine Einstein with a 200 IQ and it being 250, 275, Skip. Well, that's what LeBron is. He's Einstein on steroids. He's Einstein 2.0. The greatest mind.
Is he literally on steroids?
Yeah. There you can see. I can't. You always try. You always try to do something.
Well, you said it. I didn't.
What about Tom Brady? Because we've never seen a guy play this long. Okay. What he on?
Does he look like he's on steroids?
LeBron don't look like he on steroids. Look like a guy that take care of himself, eat like he's supposed to eat, and get plenty of rest.
Maybe it's vibranium. I don't know.
There you go. You're a hater, Skip. You always try to minimize what the man has done. Back to my original point. LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Yes, the 2020 Lakers would beat the 2016 Cavaliers. Everybody knows that.
Everybody knows that?
Yes.
Except me. Give me the 2016 Cavaliers. Give me LeBron 4 years younger. Give me JR 4 years younger. He contributed.
Yeah.
And when he decided to play defense for that team, he is right about this. They were grittier. They played harder. than the 2020 Lakers played, because they could lock you up and lock you down.
Yeah.
Because Shumpert would really guard hard on the perimeter. LeBron would sit in the chair that year a lot.
We did it. We did at a time. When we needed to sit down on Murray,
yeah,
we sat down on him.
Okay.
When we needed to clamp down on Jimmy Butler in game six, we held him to 12 points.
Mm.
So we're more than capable of doing that. Mm. But then, like I say, AD, what you going to do with him?
Mm.
They got no answer.
Here's my problem with AD and maybe even KCP this playoff run. It happened in the bubble with no fans in the bubble.
Oh, my goodness.
Would KCP have been able to shoot like that home road with fans? I don't think so. Yeah. Would AD have shot out of his mind the way he did in the bubble? He was a bubble product.
Hold on, Skip. What about those other guys and the way they played? Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson. Would they have been able to do what they did?
They did while they were in the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Yeah.
Not in the finals.
Skip, that's what we do. AD didn't do anything that AD hadn't done his entire career. The only difference is he's doing it in L.A. where there's water as opposed to Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans.
Mm.
That's it, Skip.
He wasn't doing it in L.A. He was doing it in Orlando.
He was doing it in, Skip, stop that.
Orlando. No fans, less pressure.
Look at AD's regular season numbers AD's numbers in the playoffs, whether it's the bubble, whether it's in New Orleans, it does not matter. Look at his numbers.
From what they call long mid-range, those shots which are like maybe 15 to 18 kind of feet. He was out of his mind.
Now, what'd he do?
In Orlando, in the bubble, he shot 49% from long mid-range.
Yeah.
During regular seasons, he has been 33% from his career from that distance.
Yeah.
Don't give me this. You got lucky. It was a bubblicious championship. Skip, way to go.
This is what happens, Skip, when you get somebody that's immensely talented, that has three-point range, has a mid-range game, can put it on the floor, get to the rack, and if you foul him, he shoot 94% in the bubble.
Mm.
That's what he's capable of doing, Skip, and then go. What do I say? I mean.
But wait a second. AD, is he 7 feet, 1 inch tall? No, he's not.
6'10".
He's 6'10". Is Dwight 7'2"? No, he's like 6'10"-ish.
Yeah.
Right, in that range, right?
Right.
So, JR, don't tell me that it's just size. I'll give you JaVale is 7 feet tall.
Right.
So was Mozgov.
Yeah.
Could Mozgov defend JaVale? Yeah, he could defend.
But here's the thing, though, Skip, is that when you look at it, Tristan and the size of Kevin Love, they weren't that big. You think about it, they could go.
Tristan's 6'9" and just beast you.
Skip, they could go huge. Think about it. If we wanted to, we can go JaVale, Dwight, AD, Braun. That's what we could do. Mm. We could go 6'9" and above in four different spots.
Okay.
But we didn't want to do that. Sometimes we wanted to go small. Hey, Caruso, come give us this virtuoso.
And who is going to guard the clutchest closer in basketball named Kyrie Irving in 2016, the man who won you a ring?
First of all, we run him a ring because we've seen what he did since he's been away from LeBron. Mm. I wouldn't be happy about my career at post LeBron if that was me.
And who made the shot of shots in Game 7 at Oakland?
Skip, you do realize, there was a stretch there that LeBron drew a three.
Oh, look. Oh, there he is. And it went in again.
Skip.
He did it again.
Skip.
He closed the deal for LeBron James.
Do you remember that LeBron drew a foul on a three-point shot, made all three free throws, came back down, made a three-point shot? Do you remember he did that?
No.
And then the chase down.
What was that, game four?
That was game seven. Skip, in the chase down. The block heard around the world.
Bicycle built for two. Speaking of J.R. Smith, he was the one who cut him off at the pass, Iguodala.
Bobby
Thompson.
And
he had to hesitate and try to lay it up.
There have been two shots heard around the world.
Yeah.
We did one and Bobby Thompson did the other.
No, Ray Allen did the biggest one.
Stop it. But see, you keep saying Ray Allen. Without LeBron, the Ray Allen shot is meaningless. We got 16 of the 30 points. Do you realize that LeBron almost outscored the Spurs by himself?
Do you realize LeBron had the shot at the buzzer maybe it's 5 seconds left, to tie it, send it to overtime, and he LeBricked it as usual?
But this is what happened in OT. Who brought it home? And then what happened in game seven?
My team was shot in the heart.
No, it can't be shot in the heart. How are you going to be shot in the heart? You still had a chance to win.
Mm.
The game, the series wasn't over once Riley hit that shot.
They were rolling out the champagne because my team was up 5 with 18 seconds left in game 6.
Yep. I don't know how much you gamble, but in gambling circles, you say don't burn the money.
Mm.
See, you looking at it. You burned the champagne. Started looking at it. Bro, hey, Riley, say, put that back. You know, you go shop, your mama say, don't touch it.
Give me 2016. A team had guts.
No mercy.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.